Florida Basketball, our podcast, is brought to you by the Gatorverse, an exclusive community dedicated to connecting University of Florida fans and student-athletes. Members receive access to exclusive autographed collectibles, real-life experiences, giveaways, VIP events, rewards, and athletes receive a majority of revenue from sales of their collectibles. That's the way that NIL is supposed to work. To find out more about becoming a Gatorverse member and Lockermania, visit Gatorverse.io. That's Gatorverse.io. Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. I am Neil Blackman, Saturday Down South, joined by Eric Fawcett, GatorCountry.com. Eric, tough one for the Gators Friday night. On a 3-point game, Florida had a lot of opportunities, just couldn't capitalize.
Yeah, it was a pretty crazy one. It had a little bit of a March feel to me, honestly, just in the way that there was the clash of different styles that you normally see in March. There was an intensity. There was some like just wackiness with the Corey Alexander situation. And then I just think like the intensity of the game and the way that both teams really battled. I thought it was objectively a very entertaining college basketball game. Warts and all, it's kind of like it's those games like that make you love college basketball. As is the case with many games, it came. There was big macro storylines, and then there was who's going to execute the best in the final minutes of a close game. And in terms of execution late, that was not an area where the Gators performed well.
No, the Gators got off to a great start again, second straight game. It jumped out to a 7-point lead. Virginia took a timeout. Florida subbed. Florida's bench proceeded to get outscored 9-0 immediately. Florida subbed again. And that kind of, I think, put Florida back on their heels for the rest of the first half. I'm not saying that the substitutions are the reason that happened or that Tony Bennett did anything special in his timeout that are the reason that it happened. But after the quick start, Florida was outscored 32-21 for the rest of the half and went into the break down 4.
Yeah, and I think just one of the major storylines of this game and kind of one of the takeaways for both the Gators and, Virginia, if you want to take it that way, is like this was a Florida team that looked so much more athletic at pretty much every position and so much faster and, a lot more electric. And then on Virginia, you saw guys that just played with infinitely more poise. And where the Gators were going on runs, where some of their athleticism was kind of fueling things, and their ability to run and pound the offensive glass was fueling things. Virginia was just steady, steady, steady. And while Florida was shooting themselves in the foot, it just felt like Virginia was doing what they do and not turning the ball over and getting good shots every time down the floor. And it was funny, like I thought that like the entire game, I didn't think Virginia created a bunch of, I didn't think they created a bunch of great shots. I just thought they got a good shot every time down the floor. And when you get a good shot every time down the floor and you're playing a team like the Gators who are frantically turning the ball over more than they should. And again, not making some of the shots that they probably should be making. It ultimately went in Virginia's favor. But I think it was like, you look at Florida's turnovers and lack of poise on one side of things, and you can just, it would have stuck out in any situation. But then when you play Virginia and just everyone was so under control, it just seems magnified every time that someone made a bad decision and forced a bad turnover. And like you mentioned, it was like game of runs, but that was kind of where it sat going into halftime, and I kind of felt like it continued the rest.
Yeah, no, I thought it did. And then I think that the other big story, and I kind of alluded to it earlier, was the bench. And it's not that you know, you could look at the story and say, hey, Virginia's bench outscored Florida 26-4, but really it was just two guys, right? It was Dante Harris, who is an experienced player who came in to play defense a little bit, but contributed offensively too, I think, and showed glimpses of a guy who somehow won like Big East tournament MVP a couple years ago. And then Blake Buchanan. And the reason that you recruit top 100 freshmen is because sometimes they just get out and compete. And for the second straight game, you know, we mentioned Golden DK. Well, there was Blake Buchanan leading the game in fouls drawn with 8, shooting 16 free throws, like Colin Castleton senior year-esque number. And kind of the difference in the game, obviously fouling Micah Hanlockton out. I thought this was a classic Pat Adams game where there were really bad calls both directions. And in fact, you know, we will get into the last session, the last possession, I'm sure, but there was a funny moment. So y'all, that most of y'all know that listen or followed on Twitter, that I was there and then I watched the game again. So I didn't even realize all the Corey Alexander drama was happening until I saw Tony Bennett march over towards Corey Alexander and then walk back. And Tony does not curse. And Pat Adams kind of strolls over and says, "What was that all about, Tony?" And Tony says, "It was about you not getting it right the first time, Pat." And then sat down. It's almost as if Bennett knew it was Florida's ball, but was just furious that it had come to like a TV analyst beckoning for a second review. Anyway, we can get into all that. But my point about the bench, I think, is a fair one. Florida's bench, you know, as good as their freshman looked, Eric, in the opening game, it was tough. And then, you know, I thought also tough from Denzel Aberdeen. Like, he played 10 minutes. I'm just not sure what value he added.
Yeah, so two things. This is small sample size theater. The Gators will play two basketball games, one against a low major opponent and one against obviously Virginia. So, you know, you don't want to read into anything too much yet. It's again, especially when talking about freshmen, it's not like, well, let's make, you know, sweeping conclusions about what kind of role they're going to have or if it's viable moving forward or anything like that. But a stunning number to me after two games. And again, this is about 9 minutes of playing time. So, you know, small sample size theater. But the Thomas Houck, Alex Condon front court, it's been very interesting to me that Florida has largely, and we talked about this after the first game, where like the Gators really allowed like their bench unit to play as a bench unit and their starters to play with the starters. Saw that a little bit to start against Virginia. And then, you know, later in the second half, they broke it up and Houck got some closing minutes. But the Alex Condon and Thomas Houck front court, when those two guys are on the floor together in 9 minutes of playing time, they have a minus, or the Gators, I should say, have a minus 48 net rating. So again, that's tiny sample size, but them being on the floor together, like that's when instantly the Gators started to get hammered. And I don't want to put it exclusively on those guys. You mentioned Denzel Aberdeen, who lots of people had opinions on. We'll get to that. But I wondered if even after the first game, when it was like, oh, it looks like they're trusting the two freshman bigs to play next to each other. Even back then, I thought to myself, oh, I would be interested if it would be a better move to try to stagger your starters a little bit more with those guys. After Virginia, I think that they'll look at that a lot more because, yeah, those guys, again, and put them against Virginia where they're constantly guarding flares and pin downs.
Yeah.
Pretty tough. It's pretty tough position to put them in. They struggled to guard actions against Loyola. Thought they really struggled to guard actions against Virginia. They weren't much help on all these constant pin downs and flares. And again, that's just something like, you know, you play high school basketball. You're not guarding a lot of actions. You're not having to stunt out and jump to the ball on a bunch of pin downs, but it was a tough look. And then on Denzel Aberdeen, I mean, I didn't think he was like as egregiously poor as some people thought, but I just, you know, I just didn't think he really impacted things.
And that's what I said.
Yeah.
That's what he adds. Right.
And right. Yeah. That's a good way to put it. And I just think that was a situation that between that of Aberdeen having to play more minutes than I realized he was out there, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
And of course, with Walter Clayton struggling and notably struggling in big moments, this was a game that just cried out for Zion Pullin. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's totally fair to say, oh, if Pullen's in the game, Florida wins. But it's just everything that the Gators struggled with from a decision-making standpoint, from a late game execution standpoint. I don't know if Pullen's going to help the 3-point shooting. That will be determined, but you know, possibly. But yeah, this game just cried out for Zion Pullin. I do think this was if you wanted to chalk this one up to a suspension loss, like this was one of the things that was unfortunate about the situation. You could put it there because, man, whether it was the last minute of the game when the Gators needed a ball handler, whether it was those minutes with Denzel Aberdeen that could have been Zion Pullin off the bench or whatever, Walter Clayton off the bench or whatever you want to say, whatever alignment Pullin puts Gators into. Yeah, the game cried out for Zion Pullin. And I think that's not that people were like, oh, we don't need Pullin. Like, it's obviously clear that everyone knows he was going to be an important part of the team, but that just was amplified.
Yeah, no, couldn't agree more with that. And look, you know, I thought Thomas Hack, especially on the offensive glass and on the defensive glass, well, really just on the glass. Like, I thought, you know, he's out there. He certainly was competing. I texted Eric. I said, you know, in person, I was extremely impressed with the way he fought and competed. Kind of a heartbreaking missed free throw that went in and out there too, that obviously Florida could have used. Walter Clayton is now only one. He can only miss one more free throw this year if he wants to tie last year's 97% run of greatness. Obviously that one stunk, but yeah, I mean, Florida's bench just really didn't do a lot, you know. I think it looks like they're going to get 9-10 minutes from Julian Rishwain maybe all year, and that's okay. If he's going to make a three like he did, you know, in this game, that's great. Florida shot 28% from deep. That's something we were worried about after the secret scrimmages. It's something that they didn't take a ton in their opener. They came out in this game and you know, that was one area where you see some of what Eric was talking about when you watch Virginia live. Like, you know, it is, everybody says, oh, you better shoot the three against Virginia, but it's not as easy because they're always in a position to help, right? And so when you take a three, it's not like you're getting a ton of open ones. Will Richard knocked down the open ones he got, to his credit. Rishwain knocked down one of the open ones he got. The other one rimmed out. But some of Florida's threes were heavy contests from Ryan Dunn, who was the one athlete on the floor that kind of looked like he could hang with Florida. And his stat sheet reflects that, right? I think he had 8 points, 6 steals, 9 rebounds. Like, it was a Corey Brewer type stat sheet. I was like, really? At the end of the game, I was like, he did all that? But yeah, I mean, that's so, you know, you got to make them. They're also harder to make when you see their pack line in person. What I was encouraged by, at least, was that Florida, I thought, schematically had a pretty good plan. The way that they attacked some of Virginia's ball pressure and the way that they attacked the hedges early in the game. And really, Eric, I thought one of the big differences in the game was after Riley Kugel throws up his goose egg in the first half, Tony Bennett kind of does something interesting and switches Reese Beekman to Walter Clayton.
Yeah, that was it's always interesting when you've got such a good defender on the ball. Like, do you go at the, you know, best perimeter player of an opponent, or do you put him on the guy that you think you can absolutely disrupt things? And it's like Beekman kind of like dominated in both aspects. He went on Kugel and completely frustrated him. It was unfortunately fitting that I talked about on the last podcast that, again, I think that Riley Kugel has really struggled to finish at the rim. And then against Loyola, his finishing at the rim numbers were good on largely uncontested shots at the rim. And then, you know, what happens after I say, I don't know, I still think he has stuff to work on when it comes to finishing at the rim. I still didn't like a couple of his misses at Loyola. What does he do? He finishes really poorly at the rim against Virginia. So that is going to be an ongoing situation to monitor. So, you know, Beekman plays a role in that. And then he, yeah, goes on and just completely hounds Walter Clayton. And I it was interesting. Like, I thought in the opening minutes, Florida had some good actions against the hedge. Again, using that kind of duck in ball screen, kind of changing because, again, if you're when Virginia hedges, they're always going to bring in a third defender to have to tag the roll. And when you put a second big on the block, just ceiling, posting up for a position, kind of really messes up that rotation. And we saw that, you know, really nice touch pass from Micah Hanlockton when they dumped it down to him. That was a good example. But then in the second half, I thought that Florida going away from that turned to put themselves in some really tough positions and put Walter Clayton in some really tough positions. And again, I think that Florida's big men were just way over rolling. Like against that hedge, it's really tough to get that like lob at the rim or pass on the deep roll for that roller to just catch and dunk or finish. Like you almost have to short roll. And if you're going to get that pass on the deep roll, it's got to be like a swing and then an entry. And Florida instead just kept trying to jam that ball into the middle. And we just saw so many of those turnovers were the corners collapsing from Virginia to just tap away those passes that were trying to hit the roll man, or they weren't available whatsoever. And you've got Walter Clayton, who's not tall, getting blitzed by a 6'11" player while, you know, 6'3" Beekman's on him. And he was just getting the ball ripped. So I really would have preferred some more preparedness against that hedge. It just looked like Florida didn't even realize what was effective going against it early and went into the exact, like if you said, hey, Virginia, how would you like a team to attack your pick and roll defense so that you can dominate it? Like Florida just played exactly into their hand. So again, that's one thing too, where like, you know, Walter Clayton was getting a whole lot of hate and man, that last minute looked rough where he had two massive turnovers, and it very easily could have been three if not for Corey Alexander stepping in. So, you know, it's like it was a bad experience. If Corey Alexander doesn't step in, and it's like three turnovers that are that, and two of them were, you know, essentially him losing the ball or having it, you know, stabbed away from him on non-actions, like that's an all-time bad look. And I do think Walter Clayton has to be better. At the same time, I do not think he was put into it. Situation to succeed. And I don't want to, these are not the times that I like being like taking a victory lap, but you know, I mentioned that I didn't think that Walter Clayton was going to be a particularly high level point guard at the SEC level. And he was going to be someone that needs to be used away from the ball. And I got a whole lot of pushback from people on that one. And I hate to be like, well, here's an example, but here's an example. Like he just, he almost turned the ball over just handling it in a final minute of the game.
Yeah.
And then when he faced an aggressive pick and roll coverage, he couldn't make a good play against it. So again, that's where does Walter Clayton deserve some criticism? Yeah, I think he should have made some better reads and not turned the ball over, but I think Florida could have put himself into a better position. And I think a lot of people are wondering on those 2/almost 3 turnovers, if not for Corey Alexander, like why was Riley Kugel not bringing the ball up? Why did he not have the ball in his hands? And again, we won't really know what Florida was drawing up because on two of those plays, Walter Clayton kind of turned the ball over before the Gators could even get to their action. And when they had that pick and roll where he got blitzed. Again, we don't know what Florida was trying to do, but it was a tough look. I do think this would be an example. And again, maybe Florida is fully aware that Walter Clayton is not someone they want to be playing a pure point guard role. And it's just like, hey, this is what we need to do until Zion Pullen is back eligible. But I think this should be somewhat of an example as to the role that Walter Clayton should be playing and what situations you maybe don't want him playing in.
Yeah, no, I think he's going to be off the ball when Pullen gets back. I think they'll both start. They'll move Will Richard to the 6-man spot. We will find out against Florida State. We'll talk about that a little bit. Great point about Florida's hedge attack, especially like Florida's younger bigs, including Micah Hanlockton, who I want to talk about because I thought he played a terrific game. But that would be like my only criticism of – I've had like one criticism of Micah in both games, and it's that he just gets too deep on these rolls sometimes. And like I feel like when Florida short rolled, it was much more productive. Like when it was Tyree Samuel on short rolls, it was a more productive way of attacking those hedges. I thought a couple of Florida's turnovers, in fact, two of Clayton's, were really because the roll man got way too deep. And then the other thing I'll say in kind of defending Walter just a little bit is, like, it's Reese Beekman, and I think he's maybe the best on-ball defender in the country. And so, like, you know, that doesn't mean that Eric's wrong. Like, and then the point I'd make on that is, like, I guess the caveat there is, like, there are more athletic players than Reese Beekman in the SEC. But, like, from a technique standpoint, I'm not sure that there's, like, necessarily a better – you know, defender. I don't know if that makes some sense, but nonetheless, like, I think Florida's errors in attacking those hedges are correctable because they really have to do with, like, how deep the roll man is getting, to some extent. But I think, and you'd always rather have correctable errors than schematic ones, which was a lot of the problem last year. So, you know, assuming that that's not what Florida wanted to do on their rolls, that they wanted the short rolls that were getting them really good looks early in the game, then that's great. You know, we brought it up. Let's just talk about that possession before because we can get into Handlocked and big double-double whenever. But, yeah, I was astonished when I was 15 feet away from this when it happened. When Florida gets the rebound down two and Kugel hands the ball off to Clayton, like, I almost lost my mind in my chair. Like, I just could not believe that happened. You know, your thoughts on that. And then, you know, I guess we need to have the debate of, like, the first possession, whether Florida should have called a timeout or not.
Yeah, I will go right to the timeout. Like, I will never, I shouldn't say never. I don't mind at all that Florida didn't take a timeout there. And it's something that, like, I mean, agreed. NBA fans will know that, like, Joe Mazzulla, like, on his, like, run to nearly winning a championship, there was a lot to be said about, like, oh, he never calls timeouts when, you know, in final possessions and lets his guys play it out. And then, like, when, like, Budenholzer, like, got so much praise when the Bucks won their championship for never calling timeouts in those last things and, like, letting his guys play it out. And, like, so it's just like, it's that usually the analysis of those plays is very recency bias based. And, like, I think if you've got, like, a couple seconds to get the ball up the floor, like, in, like, a couple seconds on the clock, like, yeah, you probably need to draw something up. But given the time and score, I didn't mind at all. If Florida called a timeout, I would have said, great, that's fine. If they didn't, and I think that was fine. I have no criticisms there. A lot of data would suggest that the smart move is to not call a timeout there. So, yeah, no issues with that. Yeah, in terms of Kugel giving the ball up, like, I assume he probably thought he was going to get it back. Like, I mean, again, like, obviously they put the ball in Walter Clayton's hands in those situations. I don't think that they were going to say, like, okay, it's time for Walter Clayton to cook one-on-one against Beekman to get to a step back. So I assume that there right. was something. They wanted to get that ball on a reversal against the get into a pick and roll, reverse the ball, and then have Riley Kugel attack a closeout. Like, that could have been the scenario or something like that. So, I didn't mind necessarily if Riley Kugel just kept that ball and took a head of steam up the court. That would have been great, especially hindsight being 2020. But I don't know. Like, it's a situation where even I guess I'm curious how much, like, clearly there's a lot more confidence in Walter Clayton's ability to handle the ball than I had entering the season. So yeah, I would have certainly preferred Kugel just taking the ball up and playing through him. And as much as I don't think his pick and roll numbers are great, I think he probably would have gotten into a step back three before turning the ball over multiple times. And yeah, I guess I'm just interested for the next time the Gators are in a late game scenario. But yeah, you were there, you were live. What did you think?
Well, I mean, I think Kugel thought he was getting the ball back, but at that point, there's 12 seconds left of the game, and you know, you have a guy who is the most athletic player on the floor, and he's got a chance to get the ball and just attack, you know, and I don't know. I think a big thing for Riley, I mentioned his decision making like two podcasts ago. And I think some of that involves his reads when he is attacking the basket, right? Like his ability to see the floor and make the proper pass. And like, I don't know if it's possible, but then again, like if Riley attacks the basket and makes the right pass and somebody misses a shot, like everybody blasts him for not, you know, taking the shot himself. I think what I would really have liked is just him not to give the ball up in Florida to, you know, kind of live with a player of Riley Kugel's caliber one-on-one with 12 seconds to go. And I especially would have expected him to keep the ball given the fact that Walter Clayton had just struggled and turned the ball over on a prior possession. I mean, good for Riley for believing in his teammate and stuff. I think it's a tough spot. And yeah, I mean, I like your comment about like your analysis of no timeout versus timeout, I think applies here. Like it's a lot of second guess armchair quarterbacking with hindsight, the benefit of hindsight. But to me, it's your best player and I want him to keep the ball in his hands at the end of the game. And maybe he'll learn from that. And maybe I think Florida's going to have close games this year. You know, that's a hot take. So like, you know, let's see Riley Kugel, you know, command the ball a little more, maybe.
And it'll just be interesting to see generally how this changes Florida's general strategy. Like, again, it's like Walter Clayton had turnover issues before the last minute of the game. Like, he had a couple bad ones earlier in the game, so it wasn't like that was super anomalous. And again, maybe, like, there's not going to be a lot to learn, I don't think, against Florida A&M. So, and then you get Zion pulling back. So maybe, you know, maybe we never know if it's just like, oh, like right. We just, you know, if Zion Poland comes back and is much more of a point guard and has the ball in bigger moments and Clayton's off the ball or on the bench. And maybe it's just like, oh, that was, you know, that was always the plan. Or maybe it was a response to what the Gators have seen so far. And we'll never know, but yeah. And that's something too, like while we're still talking sample size, small sample size theater, It is always funny to me how, like, every team every year thinks their team has depth, and then you get into a big game and you see that your bench only has a couple of points, and then everyone questions it. We've seen it every single year for every year of this podcast. We've had a lot of people being like, man, I really like the Gators are so deep. And then, you know, then you have a game where you have four points off the bench. And again, the Gators will get a big boost in their rotation with Pullen. But while we're talking about things that maybe change perception wise after a game like this, I think that could be one of them. But yeah, you mentioned one of the big reasons the Gators were in the game was Micah Hanlockton, who I thought was Florida's best player. To be honest, I thought he pretty much single-handedly kept the Gators in that game. On the grander scale, I don't think, like, you poll 100 people that watched that game, what kept the Gators in the game, what was the only thing that was really working for the Gators? It was their offensive rebounding. And when you look at the offensive rebounds closer, it was like almost exclusively Micah Hanlockton. Not to say that other people were, you know, Condon and Samuel and Howe could even, and Will Richard, they were working hard on the glass, but like, it was Hanlockton who was having results. And it's like he had 8 offensive rebounds himself. But when you look at a bunch of the other offensive rebounds the Gators had, you could have credited it to Hanlockton because of he was the kind of the first one to get a fingertip on it, ended up in the hands of a teammate, but he kept it alive. Or it was two guys boxing out Hanlockton and it sprayed out to a guard or a wing. Like, I really think, like, the only reason that Florida was in this game at all was offensive rebounding. And nearly all the credit goes to Micah Hanlockton. So I thought that was like, if that's the best game he plays this year, that wouldn't be like a bad thing or anything, because he was tremendous.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Florida's front court did what we kind of thought they might be able to do. They finally vanquished their Jacob Groves demons, although they didn't win. But, you know, they didn't get murdered by a Groves twin for the first time in many years. And Tyree Samuel was quite good. I mean, it's not – I don't think to take away from anything that he did to say Hanlockton was the reason Florida was in the game. Samuel had 10 points and 11 rebounds. And I think that's what hurts about, like, having to rely so much on Walter Clayton to handle the ball, the 16 turnovers that Florida had. You know, I think when you have 16 turnovers, you expect to turn the ball over some against Virginia. But again, I mean, Florida's outscored 11-6 on turnover margin in the second half, and they lose by three. And, you know, when you get 21 offensive rebounds and both your bigs post double-doubles, like, you expect to win. So that, to me, is why there's so much missed opportunity here. And you know, I expect this Virginia team to be good. I expect them to get better as the season goes along. But I also agree with Eric's assessment, having now seen it live, too, instead of just looking at these rosters on paper. I mean, look, Virginia has the best player of the two teams, but Florida is more talented. They're more athletic. And so it hurts to lose a game like that.
Yeah, I came away from that game like both thinking Virginia is better and also worse than I thought going in. And again, I know I wasn't like that high on them. I said on the podcast, I didn't think they were that talented. Like, I still like kind of feel that way. Like, again, and you kind of accurately pointed this out, but like Ryan Dunn looks, you know, really, really good. He was better than I thought. But then like, again, Blake Buchanan looks like a good young player, but you know, he looked young in a lot of situations. And
right.
And you know, like Isaac McNeely, I know he's a shooter. I don't think he brings you much else. Like Andrew Rohde looked rather uncomfortable. Like he's another guy that I was like, what? He played 37 minutes. Like, and then like, of course, on the broadcast, Neil, as you probably saw the second time, it got mentioned many times that Groves was a walk-on at Eastern Washington. And it's like, you believe it. Like, you know what I mean? Like that guy does not look like, and not saying that he just dominated the Gators, but he had a very solid game against the Gators. So yeah, I was so impressed with how Virginia played and how poised they were, but it's also like, oh man, if you put both of these teams out on the schoolyard and we were drafting teams, like, yeah, you take Reese Beekman pretty quickly, maybe first overall, but like after that, it would be, you know, be a whole lot of Gators. So I'll be interested to see exactly how this now loss ages. Virginia's up to 27 in KenPom. Again, using KenPom right now is something I probably shouldn't have even just done, just because, again, there's so much preseason baked in. But yeah, the Gators will hope that Virginia does super well. And it's one team that I'm like, I'm interested to see, because like, you could see Virginia like just continuing to get better within that system and like surprising some of these ACC teams that are more talented but don't play as connected. Or you could see just the relative lack of talent catching up to them. So I'll be interested to see. Has your opinion, like, again, like I think like the early returns on Micah Hanlockton are probably that he's going to be more impactful than I personally expected. I still think a lot of his, like, he's had a lot of points efficiently. And a lot of people have been saying like, oh, see, like, look at him score efficiently. Like, I think it's a skill that he's making himself available on dump off passes and scoring that way. But again, it's not like he's someone who's like facing up and getting offense, or it's not like he's like a dominant player with his back to the basket. So I still like think that there's going to be a bunch of SEC games where he probably has 4 or 5 points. But I didn't think he was going to dominate the glass in the way that he did against Virginia. And again, I know that Virginia is as thin a front court as the Gators will see from a high major opponent this year. But it just seems like, hey, he almost won the Gators a game here. So I've got to give him full credit for that. I'm curious if you're what your opinion of Hanlockton is after performance like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's higher, you know. I thought he was, I thought he played a spectacular game. He's on his average, two games, small sample size. He's got 7 fouls. So he averaged 3.5 per game last year. You know, he fouled out. I thought there were some people that talked about him getting pushed in the back and stuff. Like, I was there. They could have called 7 or 8 fouls on him. He's got to learn to stay vertical as big as he is. I think he leans too much when he tries to block shots. And he's stronger in person than I thought he was when I watched him on film at Marshall. You know, but he still, I think, could just learn to kind of wall off and be a little less, like, he's athletic enough to where I don't think some of these fouls that he commits are just acceptable fouls. You know, and especially against the top 100 freshmen, to commit three of them on Buchanan was just very painful. But I think, yeah, I think much better than I thought, and have to give him full props for that. And then, yeah, I mean, like, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Virginia. It's nice to have an All-American. I mean, look at his numbers in two games. He has 29 points. He's got 12 assists. He has 10 steals. He has 14 rebounds, and he has one turnover. I mean, you know, like, when that's the guy running your team, they're not going to get blown out a lot. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny how, like, this game, like, the total points in this one kind of were driven up by Florida's offensive rebounding and Virginia turning the Gators over. But it's not like there was a ton of points, but the score would have made it seem like it was a faster game than it was. And I always say it. It's so much, if you've got a team that wants to play fast and a team that wants to play slow, like 95% of the time, it's going in the favor of the team that wants to play slow. Like, it's just so much easier to slow a game down than it is to speed up a team that wants to play fast. And again, maybe someone is listening to that saying, like, well, it's, you know, it's against Virginia, so, like, they're truly the kings of slowing it down. So, like, we'll see. But, like, that's going to be a concern for me still, yeah, is if the Gators are only going to be a transition reliant team, they're just going to run into situations where the tempo is going to be dictated by the team that wants to play slow. And hey, maybe the Gators just keep pounding the offensive glass like they did against Virginia, and that's going to keep them in games. And with Zion pulling in some better late game execution, that could be enough. And again, yeah, that's one thing. Like, it's to see the temperature of the fan base completely change. Like it was interesting to see, like these are the games that, like, if Florida lost this a couple of years ago, it's probably like 60-57, and people are just disgusted watching it. Whereas, like, there was a lot of people on the timeline and on the forums that were like, hey, I really like how this Florida team competes, and I really like their energy level, and I like the intensity. And I feel like there was a lot of people that came away encouraged from that. And I think that's something we kind of said in the later stages of the Mike White era, that, like, style of play and perception, you know, matters. Like, yeah, like, Florida would have lost this game in a way in a couple of years ago. They probably lose this game in a way that does not leave people feeling particularly hopeful moving forward. And I do think there was some hope, but I want to throw just two things back to you, and you can run with either one. The first one, so I mentioned Riley Kugel earlier, just that he is finishing at the rim struggles. You mentioned that you would have liked him to have the ball at the end of the game. I'm curious if you have any thoughts about his just overall performance that was disappointing, probably, or whether you chalk it up to just getting a pretty good defender on him and all that. And then maybe more than that, when we talked with Jake before the season about three-point shooting, weren't totally concerned. After Loyola, weren't totally concerned. This is another game where it wasn't like the Gators were horrendous shooting the ball, but again, it was another, I'll say, disappointing three-point shooting game. I am curious if you have, if that's starting to be a true concern for you. And I actually did want to bring it up when you talked about Rishwane, because it seems like, I think even Florida's playing him more than they expected, not just because of the injury situation, but I feel like he is kind of the pinch hitter, where it's, you know, offense is struggling to come in the half court. Shooting hasn't been there. And it's like, well, here's a guy who can just come off a stagger on a baseline out of bounds and hit a contested three. And yeah, I almost think that the fact that he's played more minutes than expected is awesome for him. It's a cool story because he's obviously overcome that injury, but I can't help but wonder if it shows some serious concern about the shooting.
Yeah, I'm interested. Like, I don't think Zion Pullen is going to move the needle on the three-point shooting much. But maybe he moves the needle on the like looks generated for other people. So I kind of need to see it that way first before I get too freaked out. I will say that getting a 4-for-7 from Will Richard from three was both relieving and bad. And what I mean by that is that the rest of the team was 3 of 18. And like, that's not good, man. And that Riley Kugel wants to make his step back, but when he goes 1 of 6 and like 5 of his 3-pointers are off the bounce, right? Like, you know, maybe he needs to do that less. You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't think that there's anything wrong with Kugel's stroke to where like it's such a small sample size. That might be my overreaction take. Whereas I feel much more confident in my, hey man, if Will Richard's 4-for-7 and the rest of you are 3-for-18, that's probably problematic take.
Yeah, I was happy to see that volume from Will Richard. He had some just huge makes. Like again, like I talked before Virginia about how when you play the Cavaliers, you get a lot of like B minus quality threes. And he, like, I know you mentioned that he hit some wide open ones. I'll have to watch again, but I don't remember thinking like, oh, this is like wide open, this is a layup. I thought a lot of his hits were like,
yeah,
this is a very good shooter,
yep,
confidently shooting the ball in rhythm. And it's one of those things where I thought that I wanted to see Walter Clayton take immense volume. Will Richard at 7 threes a game would be fantastic too. And I actually wrote about it right before the season, and a bunch of Twitter country people were like, oh, well, I don't think anyone's averaged more than 7 threes a game since, I forget who it was, Kenny Boyden maybe. And they were kind of telling me that what I was requesting was foolish. And yeah, I would just like to use this as another opportunity to say that there are a lot of players that average around 7 threes a game. And Will Richard could absolutely be one of those people. The way he was shooting the ball was outstanding. And it's almost like instant offense when he can just,
yeah,
shake from the corner up to the 45, catch in rhythm from a couple feet from beyond the line. And like, if he can shoot those at like 35% all season, the Gators should, yeah, let him take 7, especially if you're going to play a pack line team such as this. So yeah, the shooting thing is just like not in full concern, but yeah, you start piling up games, not shooting the ball well in a row. It's you're going to start to wonder. So that'll be interesting to see. And then yeah. And then with Riley Kugel, the fact that his step back three is kind of his, like a step back jumper was so much of the offense that he had last season that had people excited about him. And again, it's like I pointed out on the original Patreon video in the off season that I don't think people realized how little he got to the rim. And then of course, like how he struggled to finish when he got there. And yeah, I think we saw that a little microcosm of that against Virginia where he struggled. He did actually get to the rim a lot more, which is great to see, but he struggled to finish there. And then, but you know, what he really wants to do is get to that step back. But as much as the step back wasn't falling, I would have loved one on the last possession. So it's like, yeah, still like,
right.
And maybe that's just it. Like, you know, Caleb Love was a loved player 2 years ago, that he fell out of complete favor last year. And now Arizona fans are really liking him. And a lot of it is because of those shots that either fall or don't in big games, or more accurately, when North Carolina was getting to big games, he could finish and then he was loved. And when North Carolina wasn't getting to big games, suddenly that skill is taking a lot of step backs is not loved as much. And now that he is, you know, in a situation to take down Duke, suddenly that skill set is valuable once again. So it just could be one of those things that, like, if the Gators are playing in close games against great opponents and he has that big shot ability, yeah, and I guess it'll also come down to what Pullen brings and if it's who the Gators want to have with the ball in their hands in the big moments. I think that going into the season, you could say, okay, well, Riley Kugel's a guy you probably want to have the ball in his hands. Then you can make an argument for Zion Pollen, and then you can make an argument for Walter Clayton. Early returns are maybe Walter Clayton is not the guy you want in that situation. We'll see how he bounces back. I would love for him to take a wide open or even a semi-contested catch and shoot three in a big moment. I still have full faith there, but just maybe not a guy you want with the ball in his hands. And there's a pretty good sample size of what he did at Iona to back that up. But, you know, I don't want to, you know, keep beating that into the ground. So, yeah, I think that's probably, what do you got?
I had one other thing. By the way, great point on the Richard threes. Like, I think it's cause there was the biggest one he hit was when it seemed like Florida might go into the half down 7 or 8. Mm. And then that one was pretty damn open. And I wanted to compliment the action there, by the way. Like, that was a dribble handoff with a ghost where Florida got downhill and was able to make a kick. And, like, gosh, like, that kind of stuff they didn't do very much last year. And it's nice to see, like certainly Walter Clinton can do that, right? Certainly Riley Kugel is a guy I'd love to run some handoff actions with a little ghost screen and see what happens, right? Like, that's kind of stuff. That's offense that is better than some of the things that we were seeing last year. And it freed up Will Richard for a big three, and he kind of hushed the crowd. Cause Florida was outnumbered. It was probably 60-40 in person, which isn't surprising. Charlottesville's a little closer to Charlotte. But yeah, I mean, if Florida plays there in the NCAA tournament, they'll be fine. They're going to have a lot of fans. And when the Gators stormed back, they had fans too. And that's what I wanted to ask about before we put a bow on this one and do beat it to death was, did you have any issue with the decision to press late? I thought it was like, it was just really black and white obvious. They were trying to speed Virginia up a little bit. I think really what ended up happening was it just sort of led to like both teams making layups a couple times or driving the lane and getting fouled. I don't think it was a terribly productive press, but I also didn't have any issue with it strategically.
Yeah. I probably would have gone to it earlier. Again, talking about how Virginia was so good, just like making the Gators have to guard multiple actions and just getting through those blocker mover pin down flare so often. Like if they were to have went into that press earlier, and just, again, take 8 or 10 seconds off the shot clock, and then maybe you have to guard 2 less off-ball screening actions. That probably would have been the time. Like, again, it's just like when they did it, I don't know. It's maybe a little late. I didn't think it shot them in the foot. It wasn't like, again, I don't like just going back to the previous coaching staff, but like, at that situation, they would have gone into a run and jump and tried to aggressively force turnovers. And it would just, it wouldn't work against good teams. And you could have seen it from a mile away. This was like a rather low risk decision to try to do a little bit more of the three quarter, just slowing them down. So yeah, I don't mind it at all. I would have gone to it earlier and it'll be interesting to see if it's something that the Gators have in their bag. I don't think that Golden pressed much, if at all, at San Francisco. So I don't know if it's going to come out a whole bunch, but maybe it's something that Florida feels, hey, we need to have something like that just to slow down opponents. And I don't mind that at all. I know I say I'm always anti press, on this podcast, whenever it comes up at the high major level. I really should caveat by saying I'm anti diamond in one or run and jump or any press that is aggressively trying to force turnovers. When it comes to a 1-2-2 3-quarter slowed down the other team by making them reverse it 2 or 3 times before half court. I'm into that. I think a lot of teams do it well, just slow things down. But again, it's like, I'll be interested to see how much Florida would want to slow down the total tempo of the game or try to speed up their opponents, make for more possessions overall. Obviously the Gators want to play fast with the ball. It was interesting. It was notable given that I don't think we saw that. I don't really remember if the Gators did that at all last year.
Yeah, I don't
remember. Yeah, no issue with them throwing it out when they did.
Yeah, that's all I want. I just wanted to make sure we touched on it because it's something I hadn't seen before. And I wasn't really – I had very little effect on me. Like I think you bring up a good point. Maybe go to it earlier. I think it did. They were trying to speed Virginia up. and make them make it harder for them to get into their actions. I think it kind of accomplished that, but I also think both teams kind of ended up getting layups out of it once Virginia like figured out what was happening. And that's okay. You know, certainly Florida will play a team that wants to speed you up on Friday. Do you have anything on Florida A&M? Cause I do not, and I'm not going to act like I've broken this down. So maybe I should do it that way before we talk Florida State.
Yeah, I have like one sentence and that's about it. Like Florida A&M is just hemorrhaged offensive rebounds. They have a center who's 6'10" and 300 pounds named Shannon Grant. He's played 40 minutes in two games and has 3 defensive rebounds and no offensive rebounds. He is like in the, like for lack of a better term, the Jason Jatobo mold of like, just hasn't been able to pursue rebounds. And he's their one kind of big body. They bring a 6'9", 250 pounder off the bench, but like, again, just kind of slow, not long. What I'm getting at is I think that Florida could, like, if the Gators were like, hey, let's go get 25 offensive rebounds, I truly think they could do it. If Micah Hanlockton wanted to get 10 offensive rebounds, they could do it. I just hope that it's an opportunity for Florida to get a little sharper in the half court and hopefully knock down some shots. Like this, I hate to be so reductive in a game like this. I really do pride myself generally with like doing more in-depth analysis of even Florida's bye game opponents. That's always been something I take pride, but for the purposes of this podcast, I don't really think there's much we really need to talk about outside of like, hey, we saw what was an issue against Virginia. This is an opportunity to work on it. Florida A&M is also a team that, like, at least to this point, and they didn't last year, they don't like junk it up. They don't press like for a team that, like, I'm pretty sure they're playing like 8 high major road games. Sometimes those teams just, you know, throw out a lot of junk just to do it and see what happens. They play pretty straight ahead, man-to-man defense. I think the Gators just need to, they need to treat this as an opportunity to get better and sharper with their half court actions. I would rather the Gators win by 18, trying to play a game that's going to help them moving forward, than, you know, win by 35. And it's because they just hammer the offensive glass and don't play particularly well, but get a bunch of second and third and fourth chance opportunities. I think that they started the season like 359th in KenPom or something like that. 2 tough losses to start the season, got hammered by like 50 by Creighton, by like 30 or something, 40 or something to Nebraska. I said I had one sentence, then I had like 10. So that's all my Florida A&M takes.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I'm not going to offer anything on Florida A&M because I want to talk about FSU. A little bit different than last year's group, which is weird to say because it's not like they kind of went to the portal and got guys that I think are going to be huge for them necessarily, Eric. But this game will be the beginning of the 4-game stretch that Ham thought would tell him a lot about his team. I kind of glossed over Jameer Watkins being like the one obvious addition for them, but and I think kind of fits their mold as wingy and somewhat positionless. But look, they have Florida on the road. They have UNLV, they have Georgia, and then North Carolina, like, cause the ACC starts conference play so early. And that's like their 4-game stretch where Ham's like, I'm going to learn a lot about my basketball team. What was interesting to me, like, I watched their game against Kennesaw State yesterday morning. And it was interesting that Baba Miller didn't play very much. He's a guy that I listed, whatever I know, I listed him as one of the top 15 players in the ACC coming in. And a lot of that was just hype, like the fact that I got to see some of his highlights in Europe this summer and was just super impressed, and that he was healthy and kind of had a year to adjust. And he only played 18 minutes. The other guy I would kind of highlight, as you know, I think the potential difference maker to get them back to the NCAA tournament this season is not is a guy that I think Eric will agree with this take, was not available last year due to a knee injury. But Deontay Green, who played about 15 to 16 minutes in their opener, is healthy. And I think is kind of the explosive player that they missed, who's a mismatch problem, who can do a bunch of different things for them. Last year, look, Darren Green is going to shoot. There is no shot that he thinks is a bad shot, right? I think they have, like I said, they have those sort of positionless wings and Jalen Warley and Jameer Watkins. I think Cam Corhin, who started kind of surprisingly to me in their opener, is not a particularly productive player. He's a guy who either Tyrese Samuel or Micah Hanlockton should be able to handle a bit. But for me, like, if there's an X factor in this game, it's kind of like, what do they get from Deontay Green? And like, how long does it take Baba Miller to start like looking like the lottery pick that everybody thinks he will be eventually?
Yeah. So like, Baba Miller is from Spain. I mean, people probably know that from a fairly public NCAA case where he was ruled ineligible for, what was it, 10, 11 games or something. There's, you know, there's still a thought with some people in the European basketball sphere that, like, especially big men shouldn't come and play in America because they don't, you know, there's a lot of European coaches that don't think highly of American coaches and college basketball coaches, and particularly what they do with big men. And like, Baba Miller is a guy that I think is just like, I think he is extremely talented, and I think looked amazing playing in Europe and playing for his Spanish club. And I am just unsure if Florida State will be the best opportunity for him to showcase his abilities, but I do think he is very, very good. Neil, you were at ACC Media Days, correct? Like Primo Spears is not getting a waiver. Is that decided yet, or is he still waiting?
He is still waiting. Leonard Hamilton did not, and I think people that listen to this, longtime listeners are going to know. Real ones at the Patreon, I have a good relationship with him. I tried really hard, both in private sessions and in the actual press conference, to get him to say something bad about the NCAA, and when I asked him about Baba Miller being comfortable this year because the NCAA didn't arbitrarily suspend him for 16 games, Ham just kind of grinned at me. They're not pleased about this whole situation. But no, Primo Spears is not going to play against Florida.
Yeah, so for people who don't know, so he already, like, he's in his third year of college basketball. He played as a freshman at Duquesne, then he transferred to Georgetown, and then is transferring it. So I don't know what the case is there, but on the surface, there would not be much to suggest why he should be eligible. But I do think the take is interesting. So he played for a Georgetown team that was pretty bad, and he scored 16 points per game on that team. And like, so there's some people that are like, oh, he scored 16 points per game for, you know, in the Big East, and the situation was bad, and he still scored 16 points. And then there's some people, like this one assistant coach in the Big East told me he is the worst 16 point per game player in the history of the Big East. So I think that, like, there's, and again, watching him, I think it's kind of like, you know, it's Sunday morning on the waiver wire in your fantasy football league, and you're just going like quick and dirty. You need the tight end, so you go Trey McBride just because of his, you know, all the targets he gets, even though it's like 3 yards an attempt. Like, this was just like I feel like it showed some desperation in Florida State's need to try to get offense. Like, Primo Spears is like very not Florida State-y, doesn't have great size. You know, he's like a 6'3 scoring guard. I don't really, like, you know, he can play the point. So, I mean, you guess he has decent size, but it's not like he's a big Florida State player. You know, I don't think he defends at a high level. And I just think that even that take at the time, I kind of was like, oh, that's not what I would have expected. And of course, he's not going to end up playing. But I feel like even just the fact that they took him says something a little bit about their makeup. So and then again, I still think, like, generally speaking, like the the Florida State stereotypes of what they look like in terms of a bunch of 7 foot three guys and 6 foot six guards. Like, I feel like that's honestly, like, it's been a couple of years since that has been the case, even though the narratives kind of persist. And I do just feel like this is like, this has went from a team that was super long and athletic, that was going to win with toughness and defense and transition, to now they play a little bit slower. They play a little bit less aggressively, and they're just not getting the high level of guard talent that they once had. And I do think they looked good against Kennesaw State, who's still a pretty good team. And but I am not sure how much of a resume win this one would be for the Gators. So we'll see if it starts to have a rivalry feel that becomes closer than it maybe should be. And it's a game that unfortunately I do think if the Gators were to lose, would not look particularly good. And at least they get that home opportunity. So and again, it's, I totally understand Florida scheduling the way they do with so many neutral site games, and we're seeing that across college basketball. But man, there's just nothing like home environments in college basketball. We saw that with Arizona Duke last night. I'm very happy that Florida State is presumably going to continue being true alternating home games. I do think this is the things that make college basketball great. So it'll be an interesting one. It's one that I think the Gators can't afford to drop too many of these types of games. So would certainly be a nice win.
Yeah, no, they need it. And again, Florida State's big, so there's not going to be the size advantage. Seminoles are always big, I think. But, even what they bring off the bench, I mentioned Deontay Green. I haven't mentioned Cameron Fletcher, but I think they kind of – what they get is like 35 minutes a game from those two guys. And so they come in and they can both handle the ball okay. I think Green is a little better ball handler than Cameron. They can both attack the basket. Deontay Green is a player. Obviously I've mentioned him a bunch. He's a guy I really like. I don't know how great he is defensively, but he's kind of what has made Florida State good, for so long. It's just like 6'8", guards a bunch of spots, can attack, can get to the free throw line. Like, I don't know if they're going to ease him in or what, but I like him. And then, you know, Ham has done a nice job with Cameron Fletcher, to be honest. Like, he kind of was a reclamation project, I think, really got his five-star feelings hurt the way things went at Kentucky, and has slowly kind of been more and more productive at Florida State. And now he's in year three, and a guy that I think can do a lot of things and is super athletic, really competes on the offensive glass, quick, a good defender. One of the eye-opening things for me was he was a guy that was at the free throw line over 20% of the, his free throw rate was over 20% last year, which is pretty high. So he's obviously gotten better at getting contact and getting to the free throw line. And that was a problem for Florida against Virginia, defending without fouling. So the Seminoles can do some things that I think will test Florida. As Eric said, I mean, it's a game Florida cannot lose, because I don't think this Seminoles team has the star power to kind of make an NCAA tournament run, unless Baba Miller takes a leap that I don't foresee him taking on Friday in Gainesville.
No, I think he's really good, and hope he gets to the level that I think he could. And again, I realize, like, I mentioned that I didn't think this was a team full of like freaks and athletes and stuff like that. It's just like, I have to catch myself, because like, still relative to the average ACC or even any team in college basketball, they still have great size and athleticism. Like, it's just like, there was years where they were like, I truly think you could argue were the most athletic team in college basketball. And, would be objectively one of the biggest, whether in terms of height, length, poundage, whatever you want to say. Like, they still like are constantly going to have 6'11" at center and 6'10" or 6'9" at power forward, whether it's Corin or Green. So like, And then, yeah, Cameron Fletcher, you have, you know, 6'7", 220 at small forward. And then it's like Josh Nickleberry, Darren Green, like, you know, 6'5". And, you know, even the point guards right now, it's like, it's Tom House at 6'7" out there. So like, yeah, they still actually, I need to make sure that I caught myself. It's just like, those guys are like, now their guards are like 6'5" and skinny and not super athletic. And like, instead of 7'3", it's 6'11" at center. Like, they still have great size. So if Florida gets into another game like Virginia, where their offense isn't really clicking, I don't think the offensive rebounds are going to save them. I definitely think Florida State can keep the Gators. Well, I mean, I guess we'll find out. I was going to say they could keep them in check. This will be the first kind of opportunity to see exactly what Florida is made of on the offensive glass, playing against a team with good size. Like, you know, as much as like Tanner Groves looked like someone who could have walked on at Eastern Washington. Blake Buchanan is 6'11", but is a freshman. Like, and Florida took full advantage and as they absolutely should have. Let's see what they do against Florida State, or let's hope that the offense is clicking a lot better and they don't have to offensive rebound like their lives depend on it just to stay close.
Yeah, I mean, those are great points. And look, I think they're much more athletic if they aren't. Like, they are kind of a mash unit in terms of dudes that are just – like, there's not a team in the Power Six, at least, that has four guys that they need to play 20 minutes a game who are all coming off ACL tears. But, like, that's the Seminoles, right? Like, Cameron Fletcher tore his ACL. Jalen Gainey, who's a spectacular defender, is probably not going to play. If you're a real one, you know that Eric and I have a lot of respect for the Ivy League. Two-time Ivy League Defensive Player of the Year. He would be a great test for Zion Pullen game one. Welcome back. But it's not going to happen because he's not going to play, you know? So Deontay Green, high four-star player out of high school, torn ACL last year. So, I mean, a lot of guys coming back from injuries. Obviously Baba walked on campus, got like shin splints, and then he pulled his groin, and then the NCAA screwed him. And so there's some questions there. And, you know, Hamilton's quote to me was, "I wouldn't wish last season on my worst enemy," which I think is totally fair. Like, could Florida State be pretty good? Yeah. Can Florida afford to lose this game? No.
Yeah. I already think even going into the season, I think that they were, I don't know, they were in like the 80s or something in KenPom. And I thought like, oh, like I, you know, there's a chance they finish even lower than that. They were 205th, which is like, that is actually crazy. Like, I know that no one was like, thought that Florida State was very good last year, but like, they were 205th in KenPom last year. Like, that's crazy. So I thought, oh, maybe they're like 105 this year. Already looking at them, even with all the injuries, I do think they're a better team than that. But they also have the opportunity for the wheels to just fall off, dealing with so many guys coming off injuries, or, you know, there's always going to be re-injury risk and stuff like that. But they're going to be pesky. In somewhat typical Florida State fashion, as much as they don't have the regular freakishness of like 2018 and all that. But I think that's all kind of, all I have to say on that one.
Makes sense to me. Hopefully Florida doesn't get behind by 30 like they did last year or whatever it was. It was ridiculous before. That was a weird one. That was like the Wake Forest Elon game that you mentioned, where, like, you know, like, if you look at the win probability bar on last year's Florida State game on KenPom, it looks like a tidal wave.
Yeah, 43-24 Florida State wins right before the half.
Oh, goodness gracious. So, yeah, so we'll see. You know, Gators need a big home win. Love that it's a Friday night game. You know, should draw a good crowd in Gainesville, and a big one for Florida as they get ready to continue, I think, a crucial stretch in the season, which is a weird thing to say in November, but all gets magnified after a loss to Virginia. I'll let Eric sign us off.
Go Gators, and keep attacking closeouts.